The days are longer, the calendar is filling up, and I want to feel as good as this beautiful summer weather. That's why I've been loving Grüns. It's one daily pack of gummies that covers my greens, vitamins, minerals, and even has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, so I don't need to juggle a complicated wellness routine on top of everything else. They taste amazing, they're easy to toss in my bag on the go, plus they're vegan, gluten-free, and HSA and FSA, eligible for reimbursement. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grüns.co. That's code PODCAST at GRUNS.co.
Off the ball.
Rugby.
Like him or loathe him, he's been great for the game. He brings in energy and I couldn't believe it. On Saturday night, I came home. My son was wearing all white and he had like tape, like a pollock hat around his legs. I was like, what's happening here?
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
This week on Richie McCormick's Sliding Doors, how a Danish wonder kid nearly ended up at Liverpool, and how the team of the 80s could have won even more. Michael Ledger's proposed move to Merseyside could have altered the European football landscape, but why did the deal ultimately collapse? Find out on this week's Sliding Doors. Subscribe now in your OTB football podcast to not miss an episode. Coming to you for free each and every Monday.
Welcome along. It is Off the Ball Breakfast. It is Friday morning. It is the 20th of February and it is 7:30 and we have loads to come across the next couple of hours or so on the show this morning. We're going to discuss a few of the back page headlines very shortly across the sports pages today as well. We're going to have Owen Heary in studio just after 8 o'clock or so to discuss, well, all the week's football talking points and particularly look ahead to the League of Ireland action this weekend as well. Tonight, Alan Quinlan is going to join us at around 8:30 this morning as well to look ahead to the now huge Six Nations clash between England and Ireland at Twickenham. That is tomorrow afternoon. 2:10 is the kickoff time in London for that one. Dara Smith-Nocton is also going to join us later on to look ahead to that game. He is over in London for us. And then Cork play Meath in the National Football League Division 2 this weekend down in Porky Rin. And it's a huge, huge game. Obviously, two counties with a storied rivalry. We'll get nostalgic and look back on that rivalry a little bit, but also discuss this weekend's huge game with the former Cork All-Ireland winning footballer and manager, Cork Conor Cunahan, and of course the former Meath captain, Shane McEntee as well, who's going to join us in studio this morning. We have Keith Tracy this morning. Good morning, Keith.
Morning, everybody. How are we?
Keeping well. We have Eve Conway. Good morning, Eve.
Morning, how are you?
Keeping well. And Arthur O'Dea. Good morning, Arthur.
That's crack.
Keeping well. We're laughing at the former Prince Andrew is across the front pages of a lot of the papers this morning. One of the greatest photographs you will see, if anyone hasn't seen it yet. You'll have seen it by now, but an absolute banger of a photograph. Andrew's shame. Back page wise, Kasper Schmeichel last night. Celtic, if anyone hasn't seen the Celtic's performance last night against Stuttgart, leaves them on the brink of their Europa and European exit. So Celtic 1, Stuttgart 4. And Schmeichel was at fault, really, for at least two of these goals last night. Calamity Kasper is the back page headline in the Irish Daily Mail. Blunders from Schmeichel leave Celtic on the brink of Europa exit. It was really bad, wasn't it? And it was getting to the point where I kind of felt a little bit sorry for the player. When you're getting booed by your own fans, it's not nice. But I mean, he was per.
Yeah, and to be fair, the fourth one is it's his error as well. He tries to get rid of the ball and he kicks it probably 25, 30 yards up the pitch straight to a Stuttgart player, and then he should really do better. The strike is fairly central. I know it goes through one of the Celtic defenders' legs, but if it's not in the side of the goal, I would always have question marks over the goalkeeper. So there was big question marks for the fourth one, and the second one is really poor as well. I know Joe Hart in commentary was actually quite good. He explained that Kasper Schmeichel is trying to time it and scoop it away, but it was a difficult enough shot, so why not just get a strong wrist there and save it and hope your defender's in and around to pick up the second one? He's overcomplicating it, Cashburn. And to be fair, once he left Leicester, I sort of looked at him and thought, he looks like he's getting a little bit heavier. He looks like he's maybe gone over his peak, and I think that's exactly what's happening. But as a goalkeeper, like as an outfield player, as a winger, as a centre, like when I was a winger and I started getting a little bit heavier and I started coming off the pace of the game, I just got thrown into the centre of midfield and people could protect me and do me running for me. As a goalkeeper, when you start coming down, you know, you're isolated and all your mistakes are highlighted. So it's the toughest position on a pitch, but I wouldn't go as far to say I'm feeling sorry for him. He's a goalkeeper that didn't play particularly well, and if you don't play well, you're going to get booed. Doesn't really matter who it's from. So he'll have to bounce back, but he's been in difficult positions before, Kasper Schmeichel, and hopefully he keeps in that difficult vein of form straight up until the internationals in March.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, if he can hold on to that for form, that'd be great.
Isn't it interesting, you know, like, because when you're watching football and like, so say if someone makes those saves and they look fairly routine if he makes it, but you know when it looks so jarring to see someone that's like just behind the pace, just off the pace, getting down, and you're like, it's kind of that thing when you're watching, it's like, oh, this would be like if you just threw a normal fella in there.
Yeah,
it's just like you could, like, it's just, it looks like they're playing a different games. It was so weird. It's where a ball goes in, like especially that first one, it was so central. That happened a lot. It happened a lot with Onana.
Yeah,
you'd see goals go in, you're like, how have you been so slow down to that?
If you were that player, like when you hit that, like there's certain shots when you hit them, you think you don't even need to look, that's in, he hasn't got a chance. But when the Stuttgart player hits that, I'm sure he's thinking, was it El Yunus? Once he hits that, he's probably thinking, that's not going in, that'll be safe that. And when you look up and see it going in your head, you're running off thinking brilliant, and people say great finish, but in the back of your head you're thinking, he should have saved that.
It encourages you to shoot more at half time than the whole dressing room is like, lads, take on this keeper, he's brutal.
Yeah, it's the worst thing ever, isn't it? Once there's a smell of weakness from a goalkeeper, set pieces, strikes from distance, it's really difficult. And to be fair, it could have been worse. Stuttgart had a goal disallowed that was really, really tight offside. He was just offside, but it could have been worse. And I'm looking, like, I watched the game last night, but I'm looking at the stats there. Celtic have a better XG. Didn't feel like that during the game. You know, sometimes you look at stats and sometimes on the eye it doesn't quite weigh up, and the stats and what I watched on the eye last night aren't particularly weighing up in my mind.
A few of the Celtic players have just looked like they've given up, and even had given up early in the game, never mind when it went 3-1, 4-1. Like Maeda was brutal, Paulo Bernardo just looked like his attitude wasn't there, and that's the problem. I think a lot of football fans can accept, and we all support different teams, but you can accept your team losing a game, but it's when the attitude drops and the shoulders drop and the attitude and just the effort, I think, drops, that's when you get criticised.
Well, this is probably the first time in the last good couple of years that Celtic are actually in a title race. Generally, they're fairly comfortable winning the SBL, and there might be somebody chomping at their ankles, but you're thinking they'll get away from them at some point. But with Hearts and Rangers doing so well this season, maybe they're just becoming a little bit spread. I know the starting 11 is not bad, but I still think the bench it comes down a few levels. And yeah, maybe that Martin O'Neill honeymoon phase has just dropped off a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I suppose you need to ask, how important is Europe to Celtic this season?
Yeah.
When they have been so chaotic, bringing back in Martin O'Neill, getting rid of Nancy, bringing back in Martin O'Neill. Suddenly you're finding yourself for the first time in quite a while in a proper scrap to try and get anything domestically. Suddenly, you know, a two-legger in Europe, maybe the energy levels aren't there. They're playing Rangers twice in the span of a week in early March.
Away from home, both of them.
Yeah.
Just looking at those fixtures. So obviously they're home to Hibs this Sunday in the Scottish Premiership. But yeah, that Stuttgart away game all of a sudden takes on little significance when you have Ibrox a couple of days later, then you're away to Aberdeen, then back to Ibrox for the Scottish Cup quarterfinals. Like,
Martin O'Neill has, like, certain managers, like if that was Wilfried Nancy there, you're thinking you have to throw a few punches in that second Stuttgart game. But I think Martin O'Neill is long enough in the tooth and has enough credit in the bank where he'll be thinking, I don't care if we lose that one 4-1 again, I really don't care. We'll go all in now to try and win the league, which they should have been doing anyway. They're still in the Scottish Cup against Rangers, but the Stuttgart game, then they've got Rangers, Aberdeen and Rangers. Those three games straight after that European competition are absolutely massive, and it's probably going to be make or break over those 3 weeks.
We should ask you, Keith, about the action on Wednesday night, particularly the action at Molineux. Wolves 2, Arsenal 2. Arsenal with a two-goal lead and ultimately in the end. It's disaster, really. Look, I don't know what it was at the end that people were so... I think it was because maybe there was a little bit of time wasting going on, but obviously from a Arsenal perspective, you can totally understand that. You're 2-1 up. You've let Wolves score with a brilliant goal from Hugo Bueno, get back into the game, but you just want to see out the game at that point and hope that what happens at the end doesn't happen. But like, do you lay the blame on anyone in particular, a player in particular? Is it on Arteta, this, or we jump it ahead?
No, again, like...
You did say, in fairness, that Arsenal will, you know, if they're going to win this league, they're going to have to maybe go behind in points, they're going to come back. So, like, this is all part of the narrative, I suppose.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying, like, it has to be a linear line to the top that Arsenal need to win every game because City are going to win every game. Well, I really don't see it being anywhere near like that. I think City are going to drop points. Arsenal have and will continue to drop points. I think the Arsenal City game is going to be massive. City have Newcastle this weekend. That's going to be massive. Every game is absolutely massive. But I'm not pressing the panic button because we draw against Wolves, and people are very quick to say, oh, they've only got 9 points, 10 points now after the draw against Arsenal. Wolves are not the mugs they were 3 months ago. Yeah. They've become an awful lot harder to beat. And I know people are still pointing to their points total and saying, but look at that. I understand that we were 2-0 up. We should have seen the game out. A little bit of a slip, but you know, the whole season we're in the final of the EFL Cup. Is it the last 16 now we're in the FA Cup? We're top of the Premier League and we absolutely blew the Champions League out of water. So the fact that we've drawn against Wolves, a lot of people are ready to throw Arsenal under the bus and they're a gang of bottlers and here we go, the bottler season 3 is coming soon. I really don't get it.
And that's just going to keep going.
Yeah, of course it is. And look, I understand it. There's a bit of banter in there. I don't mind all that sort of stuff, but I'm not buying into that narrative anyway. And I still think Manchester City have done course and distance. I know they're not at their best, but for never once did I turn around during this title race and think Arsenal are going to win it. I still think City are not the better team, but they just have that guile. And I think Gary Neville was spot on. When you've got Donnarumma making brilliant saves at one end and Erling Haaland scoring goals and Cherky and Foden coming to the party, very, very difficult to write them off. So Arsenal are banging a title race and I'm enjoying the roller coaster of emotions, and I would tell all the Arsenal fans just to enjoy it. You know, there's so much pessimism. Oh, we drew against Wolves, it's all falling apart. Enjoy it. Just enjoy this because I'm really enjoying it. And as long as we win something this season, which I think we will, I just hope it's not one of the two lesser trophies, Champions League or Premier League, I'm absolutely over the moon. It could be worse. You could be a sports fan, you know?
Eve, yes. Yeah. Your time to
calm
enter.
Down.
Live commentary, by the way, on Sunday. Spurs Arsenal, here and off the ball.
Yeah, that's suddenly become an incredibly important fixture, just outside of the usual North London derbies are huge for fans of both clubs. But suddenly it's a, can Spurs stop Arsenal from kind of being more comfortable in their title race? And can we avoid slipping even further into a relegation battle? So an already quite stressful match has suddenly taken on a huge significance, especially now we're welcoming Igor Tudor. Tudor,
I think we decided Tudor. Pre-show, yeah. Tudor was just a bit strange, yeah.
Yes.
But look, he could be a hero come Sunday evening, like one game, as you were saying this morning, he could just leave the role.
That would be great,
after 90 minutes. Greatest manager Spurs have ever had.
Possibly greatest North manager of all time ever, 100% winner. Yeah. Career. It's probably the wrong time for Arsenal to be playing Spurs, frankly, for what they need, which is to get back on track ahead of, again, a cup final coming up soon and a tricky run into the end of the season. To play a Spurs team who are kind of, there's injuries left, right and centre, and they're a team that desperately need a win, but they're a very flaky team. It's the wrong time as well for Spurs to be playing Arsenal, who will be absolutely surely going for it. I mean, Keith, I want to ask about the end of that Wolves game. The emotion that was seen from Arteta, from the players, after the final whistle. I know it really annoyed a lot of kind of Arsenal fans who are friends of mine. It's something I've seen at Spurs as well. Players who are kind of, say, the likes of Romero, who are going on social media and blasting owners or blasting the team. And I'm thinking I'd rather see that emotion on the pitch. Is that something that kind of would concern you, that you're seeing this emotion, but not during the 90 minutes?
Yeah, that's exactly what I would echo. When you get into the dressing room and people are having a bit of argy-bargy, and I think it's Jesus gets up and pushes Mosquera to the ground. I mean, exactly what you're saying. I say, do it during the 90 minutes. It's pointless doing it now and having a little bit of argy-bargy after the game. But yeah, no, I sort of like it as well, because it's not the, you know, if the Arsenal players had just put their heads to the ground and chunched into the changing room, we'd have been a little bit annoyed at that as well. And to be fair, I seen Gabriel Jesus on the ground, and then the full time whistle happened and Jesus jumps up and pushed Mosquera. I didn't see why Jesus was on the ground, so I'm not sure what happened in that little altercation. But yeah, no, I'm not overly bothered about it all. I think these are little things that people like to read into and think, oh, look, Arsenal look a little bit tetchy. I don't mind a little bit of that stuff. It can be used as a motivator. But what you're saying about the North London Derby can be a great game, it can be a bad game in terms of what Arsenal need. I would be, as an Arsenal fan, I would be a little bit more weary of this game had Harry Redknapp been in charge, just because I think he goes in and as soon as he walks into the changing room, everybody lifts up a little bit and he just brings a feel-good factor, I would assume. So I would have been a little bit more pessimistic had Harry been in charge. The fact that Igor has gone in and, you know, I don't know what he's going to try and do tactically, because tactically you can't do too much in such a short period of time, and Spurs are in a relegation battle and, you know, they can't be going in there and trying to reinvent the wheel. He needs to win games of football now, and generally when you need to win, it doesn't matter about the performance, so I can't imagine it's going to be too pretty.
He's a kind of a professional interim manager.
Yeah.
Seven times he's been brought in kind of toward the back end of a season, and no one has been relegated of any of those teams. I've been looking at his kind of, I think everyone has been looking at what system does he play and how can he adapt that to the Spurs team, who are, you know, missing a lot of players. And it's a 3-4-2-1. Now Spurs' first choice fullbacks, both of them are injured, so Porro and Udogi. So you're looking at perhaps a back five of Spence and then poor Archie Gray, who seems to have played every position on the pitch, with the likes of Van de Ven, Paulinho and Danso in that back line. It's going to be a kind of a, almost like a Conte-esque, we're going to sit back and defend, but at the same time, kind of a faster, higher press up the front, hopefully. Kola Muani had played under Igor Tudor at, I want to say, Juventus. So hopefully he can kind of maybe have a bit of an impact. He's been a very quiet loan signing for Spurs. The thing is, there's only so many players available.
Yeah.
So as I keep saying, tactically, there's not going to be much he can do with the resources he has and the lack of time that he has. I'm just hoping that we'll go in and see a performance where they're actually in those 90 minutes putting everything out there on the pitch, because it's not just a relegation scrap, but it's the biggest derby of the season.
You know, Keith, the one thing I know you're confident, you're feeling, you're fine, it's all good. You know, after, I think it was Rice, after the Bueno goal, so he kind of cuts in from the right, left foot thing, and Rice is kind of in that vicinity. And I think he throws his hands up in the air. So he's kind of like, it's obviously frustration. I'm almost certain to see him, because I know it was the number on the back. But he kind of throws, like, a very visibly pissed off. And I was just looking at the time. So it was 4 or 5 minutes after Arsenal got 2-0 up. Do they look panicked? Like, even the goal, say, to equalise. That was very strange. And I don't know why they kind of... It's one of those things where it's like... It felt... So they go 2-1 ahead with half an hour, whatever else left. And it was almost like, shit, we got to get out of this now. Got to get out of this intact. Whereas, I don't know, it's kind of almost playing the situation rather than putting the game in front of you. Like, they shouldn't have had any issue with Wolves. I know Wolves are better than they were. But like at the same time, like I'm surprised their kind of motivation wasn't, right, we'll go get a third.
Yeah.
Whereas like, lads, hunker down.
Yeah, but you have to take the opposition into account. I know there was times during the season, I think it was against Aston Villa, where Arsenal, like, they went and smelt blood and just put Aston Villa to the sword. I would have likened them to do that against Wolves, but I think Wolves just come into the game that little bit, and I give them credit for that. I understand the mistake with David Royet and his Gabriel, who goes up for the header. Yeah, they're really difficult ones, because you're always told, if you're the defending player, if you can deal with it, go and deal with it. And if you're backtracking and you hear the keeper saying he's going to deal with it, but you feel you can deal with it, you're in no man's land, because the last thing you want to do is duck and put the goalkeeper off, and the last thing you want to do is go and challenge him, and that ends up happening. So it's just one of those balls that ends up being a little bit of a mix-up. I understand people are saying, don't they look nervy? But look, there's going to be times where the opposition just play really well. And again, I think it was it Sunderland a couple of months ago. I remember a mark and saying Arsenal would have lost that game last season. Arsenal arguably would have lost this game last season. So yeah, I'm still a million miles from pressing the panic button. You know, I think these are things that people look into because Arsenal haven't done course and distance. I mean, Arsenal struggled against Wolves in the first game. In the Emirates.
Yeah.
They was it 2-0 in the end, but it was 1-0 and they ended up getting a set piece. So Arsenal struggled against Wolves in the first game and nobody really was saying, oh, that gang of bottlers there. It was Wolves just put up a decent fight.
So when I'm watching Arsenal games, you can sense the stress from Mikel Arteta, and that's obviously because he's in charge of a team that's leading the Premier League. But I'd say if he's wearing one of those smart watches, it'd be telling him to sit down and calm down. Like, he just lives and breathes every minute. Do you think when a team's 2-0 up and then maybe they go back, you know, Wolves score 2-1, can players sense any tetchiness or nerves from the touchline? If their manager is that kind of, you know, you see some managers at the touchline who are absolutely so calm. Arteta's just not one of those. Does that feed through to players sometimes?
Yeah, it does. The manager's demeanour can definitely set the tone for the pitch. And I see it as both sides. If you don't want your manager sitting in his seat the whole 90 minutes and not, you know, not being involved in the game. I don't really, you know, either or. It doesn't bother me if the manager's running around giving out, if he's really, really placid on the sideline. It doesn't really bother me, but yeah, I understand the tetchiness, and as soon as Wolves score, Bueno scores that lovely goal, you're thinking Arsenal are in trouble here. And I've been in those games when the tide starts coming against you, it's very, very difficult to wrestle it back. But with Declan Rice and Zubimendi and, you know, all the talent that Arsenal have, you would imagine that they should be able to do it. But I'm prepared to give Wolves a little bit of credit. But I have to be honest, and I said this at the time, like, the Rob Edwards leaving Middlesbrough to go to Wolves, and I know he said he played for Wolves and his heart is at Wolves and Wolves is his club. They're going to be waving past each other at the end of the season. Yeah. I thought it was a crazy decision at the time. I know the allure of the Premier League is real and he wanted to do that, but I never seen him getting Wolves out of trouble. I will say that he's improved Wolves a little bit, but they were always doomed to go down. It just seemed like a crazy decision, and even his agent must have been thinking, you sure you want to do this?
Yeah, big time. As you say, Middlesbrough look set to go up and Wolves certainly to go down. Bobby Dwyer, your number one fan, is in the YouTube comments. Spurs fan.
Oh, here we go. Keith.
Currently, he's on his honeymoon. Currently sitting on a beach in Mauritius with a beer in my hand. Can't wait for Keith and the rest of Arsenal Fan TV's meltdown. Meltdown when we take points off Arsenal on Sunday. Come on, you Spurs.
Don't be throwing me into the AFTV. Jesus, I'm not that bad, am I?
Not at all, no. He does make one pertinent point, which a question rather about Eberechi Eze, and whether Spurs avoided for good reason signing him now. After
don't rewrite history.
I know, and desperately wanted him. He didn't get the jersey on.
Real canny move.
But what I would say is there more concern? Like, so someone like Gyökeres, for example, you can give, and he started scoring goals, but he's not used to the Premier League, so he deserves a bit of leeway and a season to get it, find his feet. With Eze, is it a bit more concerning because he's played in the Premier League, he knows the division, so his lack of form is maybe more of a concern.
Yeah, but Eze's been asked a lot of different questions. I mean, at Crystal Palace, every time he got the ball, if he lost it, there was no repercussions because somebody else was tasked with going and getting the ball back. At Arsenal, if he loses the ball, he's getting slapped on the wrist, and it happened with Mikel Arteta already this season. And look, he's at a huge club. I'm not trying to be disrespectful to Crystal Palace, but going from Palace to Arsenal, there is a bit of a difference there. So I think he's just learning on the job. I know he's an English international, but he's learning to play with new players like Victor Gyökeres, like Madueke, Martinelli, Saka. All these boys are all new to him. So I'm prepared to give him a little bit of time. It was just when he scored that hat-trick in the North London Derby, you're thinking he's about to catch fire here and he's going to be this brilliant, brilliant signing. Hasn't quite turned out like that, but you know, it's not like, oh, that's it now, get rid of him, get somebody else in. There's plenty of time for Eberechi, and he's already shown us that he has the levels required, but just needs to be a little bit more careful in possession, because if you lose it in that number 10 position and Arsenal have committed bodies forward, your arse can be hanging out the window. But generally, he's been okay, but we need a little bit more than okay.
Nervous for Sunday, Eve?
No, you can't really be nervous at this point.
It is that free hit thing for Spurs in some ways.
You just throw absolutely everything. You throw the kitchen sink at this game and you just go all in, because at this stage in the season, there really is nothing to lose. If we do not go in and try and win matches, you are staring down relegation. It's only a good thing that Nottingham Forest are as chaotic
True.
As they are. I'm not seriously worried about. I'm concerned.
Are you not concerned?
No, I am very concerned, but I'm trying not to be.
So 5 points, or the 5 points clear of, of West Ham and 18th currently. But I mean, you look at Spurs fixtures. Like, there's no gimmies. Obviously, Arsenal away at home this weekend. Away to Fulham, then home to Palace. A lot of London games, and then they're at Anfield on the 15th of March. Look, it's hard to know. You could beat Arsenal and then lose to Fulham. This is the way the Premier League season has gone.
It's a far better scenario, though, when the fact that it's in your control. Like that game a couple of years ago, the Spurs City game, where Spurs kind of needed to not win in order to allow City to win the title. That Son threw in on goal and ended up not scoring. It's nicer now. It being very much in. It's not a case of are Spurs going to not win a game to try and Arsenal not win the league? It's more like Spurs genuinely do need to win this. There's also a bonus of hopefully tripping Arsenal up in their ambitions.
It does numb the pain, though, doesn't it? Like, for Spurs fans, it's one of those huge, huge games. It's like when Spurs played City recently, and I've seen a lot of the Spurs fan forums saying, wouldn't be the worst thing if we lost here, which is just not the attitude you need.
You do that.
That's the online fan base.
It's every season, you know, this comes up again and again. It's a horrible position to be in. You never want it to be, what, kind of February, March, and the most important thing in your season is someone else's club.
Yeah.
You know? What will be most interesting is, once we get past the North London derby, to see what Tudor does with the squad. You know, the fact that it is so kind of decimated, like, is he going to bring through some youth players? Handiest way to get a bit of credit in the bank. People love when that happens. And then once it hits the summer, I'm assuming we're still going to be in the Premier League. There's already some sponsors.
We'll be mad if they're relegated.
It's not going to happen.
Incredible.
But there's already some sponsors at Tottenham. There's been kind of stories leaking in the press in the past few days of sponsors unhappy with the direction of the club, sponsors unsatisfied with, kind of in this post-Levy world, what's happening in the long-term future. So they can't get relegated. There's still no naming rights on the stadium.
Yeah.
You know, our title sponsor AIA is leaving in the next couple of seasons, so there's a lot of things up in the air. Financially, relegation would be obviously disastrous. So
you can't be playing in a £1 billion stadium and playing Swansea and Charlton in the Championship
Tuesday night. Everyone in the office has been very nice giving me their Championship away day recommendations. So it's nice to know that everyone's being very supportive.
Jesus, that would be insane.
No,
Ryan Barry Murphy's Cardiff.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
There'll be a lot of talking points in the Championship next year. A couple of the talking points to get through. Barry McNulty was a Leitrim footballer that we've spoken about in the show, obviously, this week, but 6 2-pointers for Leitrim last weekend against London. I was asking Keith pre-show, because some of these 2-pointers were off the right, one of them I think was off the left, or vice versa. The best ambidextrous footballers you came across who were just equally as good off both feet. And not the kind of player who's predominantly one and then pretty good on the other, like someone who you would place your life on with both feet.
Yeah, it's not as common as you would think. It's quite a rarity, and I know just the odd player that, like, I can give the ball a smack with my right foot, but I wouldn't say I was a two-footed player. I've took the odd corner with my right foot. Did we get the two-footed corner challenge up there a while ago? I done it on Sky Sports. So
you did quite well.
A million miles ahead of everyone else.
Yeah, there you go.
I nearly got the record, but I hit the side netting. But no, it is quite a rare thing. Like, I remember Paul's goals, and it's not like he can hit the diags with his right foot and his left foot. It was the little angles and the balls around the corners when you try and press him. It was outside of the left, inside of the right. It didn't really bother him which way the ball came. Berbatov was pretty much the same. Technically, really gifted with both feet. But it's quite a rarity, I have to be honest. There's very few that are just as good with the left and the right. Ross Wallace could use both, but would be predominantly left-footed. Kieran Trippier was all right-footed. I mean, we tried to get him into the two-footed corner challenge, and when he heard you had to use your left, he didn't want to know. Yeah, didn't want to know.
A professional footballer on that amount of money, that is mind-boggling. Because you see players at Sunday League level, you know, the very odd one who can kick with both feet. You'd think at the Premier League level, every single player would need to kick with both feet well.
It's a talent that is so underrated. And I've said this story before, but I was playing for Blackburn Reserves, and every time I got the ball on the left wing, the opposition manager was just shouting, "Show him on his right, he's no right foot." And I thought, I'm not having this. And I got myself to a point where I remember going, when I first went to Blackburn, Duffer had just left, and he had this thing where you'd run at a mannequin, take a touch inside, and just pass the ball into the back of the net with your right foot. And I did it time after time after time, and it was a Damien Duff exercise. And yeah, it was just about shooting with your right foot, but not like just swinging on it, just passing the ball into the side of the net. And yeah, it was something that I tried to perfect. But yeah, Teal Guy as well was very two-footed, could do both left and right. But yeah, it's there's not a lot jumping out on me, to be honest. There wasn't a lot of two-footed players.
Would players like practice, you know, like I'm going to genuinely dedicate X amount of time to being like, because like the likes of in tennis, like Rafa Nadal, I think naturally right-handed, and he was forced as a kid to train left-handed because it's such an advantage.
Not really. I've never seen players do it off their own back. I mean, when like we play two touch in the little games, you might get one player might be all in, and I've had managers say to me, Keith, you can only use your right foot or something like that. But no, generally, like technique work, you would do both feet anyway. But I've never really seen a player going and practicing on his bad foot off his own back. He might get to do it if a manager forces him to, but. No, but that's one of the things that baffles me. You're in the training ground nearly every single day for 5-6 hours a day. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Like it doesn't have to be as good as your left or as good as your right. Just get it to a certain standard that you can use it if the ball comes there.
Because it's going to come there. At some point in the game, you're going to get the ball on your own foot.
Imagine how much easier to defend against you are if the player knows he's only got a left foot. He might fake on his right, but he's never going to use it. You only have to defend one side. But if you know you can use both, you're just opening up so many more challenges and you're harder to defend against.
Yeah. My favourite Eric Lamella goal is that little...
The Travella thing.
Yeah. If you'd cut off Eric Lamella's left leg, he still wouldn't use his right. You know what I mean? Like, he's so left-footed. But it's very stylish.
Was it the game against Spurs? The United game, the recent one? And you know, it was... I was kind of taking the piss a little bit. But Bruno did... Was that same? Is that same?
Yeah, the Travella thing as well. Yeah. It was the cross, yeah.
And
he
crossed it from, as you're watching, the far right corner. And it was like, it was pretty pin perfect.
Yeah.
And I'm always shocked at those things when you see it. You know, when you kind of get a glimpse of how good these guys are. And even think, like yourself, like with professional footballers, like where it's like, I know you're talking with such fine margins there, like between professional footballers, but and even you're saying like, I'm sure with Kieran Trippier doesn't have a left foot, but I'm sure Kieran Trippier's left foot is like, as you're saying with Sunday Lee, I'm sure he could equip himself in the middle.
No doubt.
He'll cut in off the left, that's all right. But it was just when you see that and you see it and then the Lamella, like, and it's like, you're doing it like, anyone doing that, it's like, it'd be an element of risk. But like it's the most natural thing in the world to him, just and it's like perfect. Go up and down,
and that's just a timing thing. It's you move the ball to one side, and it's a timing thing when you're going to swing your leg around the back. And I never did that. I used to always hurt my knee whenever I tried to do it. The opposite knee would always start to give a little bit of grief to me. But yeah, no, I've crossed the odd ball like that in training and messing with people when I'm taking the mick. But yeah, it's an easy enough trick to do.
Did you ever see the great clip? It was somewhere in the 70s where Leeds were battering Southampton. I think Leeds had been playing Southampton 4 and Southampton had got a win, and someone in the Southampton thing had somehow slighted Leeds, that somehow insulted them. I don't know what it was, or something, or it was in their mind. But there's a great clip of that game. Leeds won about 7-0 and they're just passing the ball around. But there's a great clip of Giles. The ball comes to him and he just does that. Like in the pitches, like it's like a style, like it's nothing. Yeah. But he just does that one of them and just flips it up around to the corner to your man, whoever his teammate. Perfect, pin perfect, but like so needless.
Just take
pure insulting thing. It's like it's like you'll never do that to us again. It's like just taking the.
You know what? Unnecessary skill. Remember Anthony done that when the ball came into him and he started doing pirouettes and there was nobody near him. Oh, Jesus Christ! What are you doing there?
Was the time Wayne Rooney put the foot on the ball and then he put his hand on his hips and did this, you know, come and get me kind of thing. Just unnecessary.
But Charleston did keep the uppies at one stage.
Yeah. And Nani did the same, I think, against Arsenal. Remember, it was hacked out of him. Fair enough. We've got a few YouTube comments coming in on the two-foot. Andrej Kanchelskis comes to mind for me, actually, someone who, you know, you felt like if he cut in on either foot, he was quite dangerous.
Can Chelsea stand on the ball and do the...
It might have been him. Yeah. Was it Kanchelskis?
I had a flashback there.
It was that era. It was that Mark Hughes, Kanchelskis, Cantona team anyway. Yeah, you're right. Cherky, the best two-footed player in the Premier League at the minute.
Son Heung-min.
Yeah, another one. Yeah. Kevin De Bruyne, as someone says.
Yeah.
Like, not sure. McGeady is another mentioned. Adam Lallana is another. A few decent names. Someone mentions Morten Gamst-Pedersen. Bobby Dwyer says, wasn't Gamst-Pedersen naturally right-footed and his dad saw there weren't enough good left-footers in Norway as a kid? It reminds me of, I heard a story recently about Casemiro when he was on, he went to underage trials in Brazil when he was a kid, and they asked everyone at the trials, put your hands up if you're a defender, put your hands up if you're a midfielder, put your hands up if you're a striker. When they asked striker, first of all, 75-80% of the kids obviously put their hands up. And Casemiro noted that and said, when they ask for a defensive midfielder, I'm going to put my hands up. And naturally, out of the 100 kids, I think 4 or 5 put their hands up for defensive midfielders. He obviously played quite well and got his place in the team, so he just ended up as a defensive midfielder. Smart enough move.
I never knew Martin had a rifle.
I have to say, I didn't either.
I never seen him use it.
No.
It's an unbelievable rifle. Left foot, unbelievable left foot, hammer of a left foot, very, very accurate, but I never seen him smack one with his right.
No. Konchesky's still on the ball when it Rangers, yeah.
Aaron was it Rangers? Says. I had him in my memory. He has a United jersey on.
Yeah, he does for me too. Actually, yeah. JJ Okocha did his fair share of unnecessary skills as well.
Not unnecessary. I like the ones that are
necessary.
Yeah, well, I just like the Anthony ones because it's just stupid.
Yeah,
it doesn't look. I don't mind a little bit of showboating. But yeah, some of those things you wouldn't even call a showboating. There's a great compilation clip as well of Joey and Doe. I think it's mostly with Sligo, but just some of the stuff he was doing.
Yeah.
But I wonder sometimes with that, no disrespect, Owen would have played with him, I suppose. But Jesus Christ, his technical ability looked unbelievable. Mm. And it's just, anyway.
But isn't it so much better when, I always tell kids, if you're constantly having to use skill and to get away from people, then you're probably doing something wrong. You should be passing it before you're in trouble, and there's going to be times where you are in trouble, and that's where you show me the little bit of skill that you have. But if every time you get it you're trying to nutmeg people and go past 2 or 3, something's wrong here. Something's really not right. You shouldn't be in that much trouble in a game. You should be able to move and pass. I mean, the most frustrating players are the ones you can't tackle.
Yeah,
that's why I always tried to play 1 or 2 touch in the opening couple of minutes, because if you can't kick me in the opening couple of minutes, you're just going to become more and more roiled, and that's when I'll use your aggression against you and try and go in behind.
Yeah, 100%. We'll get into loads more with Owen here. He might ask Owen about Joey Undo when he comes in as well.
His commentary is unreal, isn't it? And is he still doing it, the League of Ireland commentary?
So I've not heard him in a while.
Welcome to heaven.
Welcome to heaven. Welcome to heaven. It's Off the Ball Breakfast on a Friday morning. Loads to come between now and 9:30 or so. We're going to have some more football chat later on. Alan Quinnan as well is going to join us to talk rugby in a bit. And Shane McEntee and Conor Coonahan to look ahead to Cork versus Meath this weekend. And while I mention rugby as well, don't miss a minute of rugby this month with an Off the Ball subscription. For a limited time only, you can get your first month for just €1. That's all of your Six Nations coverage, expert analysis, specialist podcasts, and plenty more. Try OTB for a month for just €1 and see why Ireland's rugby fans never switch off. Download the Go Loud app and join in the obsession.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's Sports Breakfast Show.